11. Financial relief. A second example of prophecies promising progress and prosperity is the prophecy about increasing financial help. This prophecy was attended by the strangest circumstances. In respect of time, it was the promised Messiah's earliest prophecy. It so happened that his father was taken ill. Hazrat Mirza Sahib had no experience of revelation until then. One day, it seemed that his father had more or less recovered. Only some diarrhea remained. Yet, Hazrat Mirza Sahib had the revelation, "Was-samaa'i wat-tariq," by the heaven and by the night-comer. Night-comer, in Arabic, tariq, means that which comes at night. Hazrat Mirza Sahib understood that the revelation foretold the time of his father's death and that it had come as divine condolence over his impending bereavement, the sympathy of God in the coming grief. Many sources of family income were connected with his father, pension and presents and a part of the family property. On receiving the revelation, Hazrat Sahib experienced some anxiety. The pension, the periodical presents, and a part of the property were all to go. But then came a second revelation, and this contained a grand prophecy. It said, "Alaysa Allahu bikafin 'ibdahu?" Is not God sufficient unto his servant? The revelation conveyed to Hazrat Mirza Sahib the promise that God would look after him and meet all his needs. He mentioned this revelation to Hindu and Muslim friends. One of them, a Hindu who is still alive, went at his request to Amritsar to have a ring made with the revealed words engraved on the stone. Knowledge of the revelation spread. The importance of it became more evident when, under providence, litigation over family property started within the family. Even what was to remain with Hazrat Mirza Sahib out of the family property seemed likely to slip away from him. His elder brother managed the family affairs. Differences arose between this brother and other relations. Hazrat Mirza Sahib proposed that they should treat the relations with more than ordinary consideration. The brother did not agree. Matters went to court. The brother requested Hazrat Mirza Sahib to pray. He prayed, but was warned that the brother would lose and the relations would win. The warning proved true. More than 2/3 of the family property went to others. Very little remained with the brothers. Enough for maintenance, it was not enough for the great work Hazrat Mirza Sahib was about to undertake. He was preparing his magnum opus, Brahine Ahmadiyya, a work destined to produce a revolution in the religious world. The publication of this book needed funds. The provision of funds, apparently impossible, became possible through miraculous ways. Men, little interested in religion, were moved to help and to provide the funds for its publication. 4 parts of the book were published, but it was obvious that more and more funds were now required. The published parts confounded the critics of Islam. They stopped their attacks on Islam, but started attacking Hazrat Mirza Sahib. Great excitement arose. Hindu, Christian, and Sikh publicists all joined in. Hazrat Mirza Sahib was ridiculed about his revelations. The object of their propaganda was to alienate the people from his writings on Islam and to save the critics of Islam from a defeat which seemed inevitable. Some Muslims, out of jealousy, also joined them. The attack on Hazrat Mirza Sahib came from 4 sides. To repulse the attack, more and more funds were required. Attacks by Muslims as well as non-Muslims had to be met, and the glory of Islam maintained. Thank God, the means were not long in coming. And now, Hazrat Mirza Sahib advanced into a third period of his life. He began to have revelations that he was the Messiah promised in the old prophecies. The first Messiah was not alive in heaven but had died like all mortals. On the publication of this claim, many who had attached themselves to him withdrew. Only 40 persons accepted the claim and made a solemn affirmation on his hand. Hazrat Mirza Sahib was now at war with the whole world. Many erstwhile friends joined the opponents and started doing their worst. The funds needed began to exceed all estimates. Replies to opponents, publicity of the claim and of arguments for the claim, also the publication of leaflets for the instruction of followers, were heavy liabilities. At the same time, the power of God was due to manifest itself in new ways. Still heavier liabilities were to be incurred by Hazrat Mirza Sahib. God commanded him to start a guest house at Qadian and invite all and sundry to come and stay as his guests, receive direct instruction in religion, and have their doubts and difficulties removed through personal contact with him. The loss of old friends and helpers, the increase in printing and publishing needs, and now building a guest house and entertaining a stream of visitors amounted to a huge liability. It might have disrupted the movement at its very inception if Allah had not been ready with his help. A few dozen men who had joined him, and not one rich man among them, most of them in fact very poor, proved equal to the task. God fulfilled the minds of these poor men with extraordinary zeal. They endured hardships and privations, but did not let the interests of faith suffer. Apparently, their sincerity and their sacrifice, but really, the promise of God in the revelation, "Is not Allah sufficient unto his servant," was at work. The Ahmadi Jamaat now faced general persecution. Maulvis had issued the fatwa that the punishment for Ahmadis was death. Looting their houses and dispossessing them of their property and marrying their women elsewhere without the formality of a divorce was not only lawful, but an act of merit. Ill-motivated and criminal-minded men looking for excuses for the display of their lusts had started acting on this fatwa. Ahmadis were being turned out of their houses and dismissed from service or work. They were also being deprived of whatever they possessed. The only salvation from these troubles was migration to Qadian. A steady flow of refugees into Qadian increased the expense of housing and feeding them. The Jamaat now numbered 1,000 or 2,000, but every one of them was exposed to hostility and hatred. They lived in continued anxiety. Anxiety over their lives, honor, possessions, and property. They also had their daily debates over differences. Yet, they found the money required for the propagation of Islam, for the feeding and putting up of visitors, and for an increasing number of refugees. Hundreds of persons had their meals twice a day at the guest house instituted by Hazrat Mirza Sahib. The very poor among them had to have other needs provided for besides. Individual residents also had to entertain visitors and refugees. Every house in Qadian was open for this purpose. The promised Messiah's own house always remained full. Every room in the house sheltered some guests, sometimes a whole family. The financial burden, already heavy, became heavier and heavier. New difficulties and new responsibilities were being added every day. But anxieties did not stay. they were driven away by the divine promise, "Is not Allah sufficient unto his servant?" Circumstances which seemed to threaten the very existence of the Jamaat turned into assets, sources of weakness into sources of strength. Thunderstorms turned into welcome light rain. Every drop echoed back the promise of divine help. Is not Allah sufficient unto his servant? The troubles of those early days can well be imagined. The people of Afghanistan at one time had to receive an influx of refugees from India. Afghanistan had an established government ready to entertain them, and many refugees paid their own expenses. The number of hosts was larger than the number of guests. 10 million Afghans had to entertain 100,000 or 200,000 refugees. Yet, difficulties arose. Thus, the pressure on the resources of a Jamaat, 1,000 or 2,000 poor, in feeding several hundred visitors and refugees and financing the propagation of Islam can well be imagined. And let us not forget, the small group who bore all this lived not in peace, but in perpetual anxiety. The needs and liabilities of the movement were not to last for days or months or even years. They were to last and increase from year to year. But every year God's help came and provided the necessary means. In 1898, Hazrat Mirza Sahib opened a high school for the education of the young members of the Jamaat. The school was to have a proper religious side. Financial liabilities further increased. A little later, two monthly journals, one English, one Urdu, were started for the propagation of Islam. Activities of the Jamaat expanded. Means were provided by God. At the present time, the Jamaat maintains an English high school, a theological college, and a girls' school at Gardian, plus primary and middle schools in other places. It also maintains a number of preachers for work in India. Missions for the propagation of Islam are maintained in Mauritius, Ceylon, and England, and also an establishment at the headquarters to organize and direct the work of the Jamaat. There are editorial and publishing departments, a department for instruction and education, a department for general administration, a department for settling disputes, a department for determining questions of religious laws, etc., etc. The budget of the Jamaat amounts to about 3 or 4 lakhs, 300,000 or 400,000 rupees. The rising financial liabilities of the Jamaat are being met by the special grace of God promised in the revelation, "Is not Allah sufficient unto his servant?" The Jamaat remains poor. This is in keeping with the law of God, which permits only the poor to collect around a divine teacher in the beginning. People hold early followers in contempt. مَا نَرَاكَ اتَّبَعْكَ إِلَّا الَّذِينَ هُمْ أَرَاذِلُنَا بَادِيَ الرَّأْيِ. We see that none have followed thee but only the meanest amongst us. The wisdom of this law is that the success of a divine movement cannot then be attributed to the help and interest of human beings. Neither friend nor foe is able to say such a thing. The fact that a small and poor community is able to bear an increasing financial burden can only be accounted for by divine help. Members of the Jamaat pay the same taxes that other citizens pay. They pay the revenue assessed on their lands. They pay for roads, hospitals, schools, etc. They have their other normal financial obligations to discharge. But, in addition, they have their voluntary liabilities for the propagation of Islam, which they also discharge. They have done this now, 1920s, for 35 years. True, During this time, some relatively well-to-do and socially well-placed persons have also joined the Jamaat, but the liabilities of the Jamaat have increased proportionately. It may seem strange that while others who are richer and more prosperous grumble over their private budgets, Ahmadis, year after year, not only do not grumble over their private budgets, but give away lakhs for the sake of God. Many of them rely so much on the grace of God that if need arose, they would put their all in the way of God. Where did this faith and this spirit come from? Only from God. Only God can provide the stimulus. It was God who first assured the promised Messiah, "Is not Allah sufficient unto his servant?" No power could have held out such a promise and so early. At the time of this revelation, the promised Messiah feared for a mere living. How could he hope to find the large funds needed for the ever-increasing liabilities he had incurred on behalf of Islam? What power could promise such a thing and then fulfill the promise? There are tens of millions, crores, of Muslims in the world. How much do they give for the propagation of Islam? If other Muslims in India were to make financial contributions at the same rate as members of the Ahmadi Jamaat for the propagation of Islam, they could provide about 9 or 10 crores every year for this purpose. This, if their economic level were the same as that of Ahmadis. But Indian Muslims include many rich men, rulers of native states, and owners of big businesses. If we keep in view the resources of the richer Muslims, Indian Muslims alone could subscribe more than 15 crores of rupees for the propagation of Islam. But they do not provide even a decent fraction of what this small, poor community is able to provide for this purpose. Why such a difference? Because Ahmadis are sustained by the divine promise, "Is not Allah sufficient unto his servant?"